There we go. I'm sorry. I didn't hit buttons because we were talking. All right. James, I think you're on microphone number four.
Hello. Okay.
Apparently not.
Good morning.
Oh, you're on number three. Okay. And go ahead and introduce your guest, and then I'll find out what microphone he's on.
All right. So, yep. We're back in for today and brought our park naturalist intern, Jono Bowdle. Did I pronounce that right?
Bowdle,
yes.
Bowdle.
I used to say Bowdle, but I'm horrible. So again, I apologize.
It's like a bottle that's been pinched. Bowdle.
I guess that's a way to look at it.
I
yeah.
don't know. Go ahead and say a word or two, Jonah, because I want to make sure your mic's on.
Hello?
Oh, yeah, your mic's on. All right, excellent. Hey, if you want to talk to us, by the way, and you've got your pencil ready, I'll give you a second or two here. If you want to talk to us, you can talk to either Jonah, or you can talk to James, or you can talk to me. Just give us a call, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. Now, I always forget to do that, so I've done it this
time. That's right. That's great.
But I forgot, and I put an ad on last week saying you're going to be on last week. So we have a very confused audience right now. So
it's every last Thursday of the month.
Yes, and, you know, I knew that. I just don't look at my calendar enough.
That's all right.
So,
and you know, I was telling Glenn, I said, Charlie Evers, he did that a time or two.
And he's a legend.
That's right.
That must make me a semi-legend.
Hey, there you go.
All right, well, today we're going to talk about some stuff. We're going to talk about daylilies. We're going to talk about what Jonah's doing and why he's decided to come on board. And we're going to talk about all sorts of things. I'm not quite sure what we're going to talk about, but we'll be freewheeling it today. All right, let me talk to Jonah first. All right, James?
Sounds good.
Why are you here? I understand the biological reason why you're here, but why did you decide to go into this?
Well, about a year ago, there were some chickens released at Tallgrass Trail. And James was doing a program, I believe Kiddos at the Park, that morning. He put it up on Facebook, and my dad saw it, and he sent it to me. And I drove down to pick up the chickens, and that's how we met James. And then my dad decided to tell him about me, which I do. I keep a lot of reptiles. I like nature in general, but I also have a YouTube channel. It's DIY Reptiles. It's about my reptiles and the things I make for them, and it's kind of educational just because I show what I do.
You didn't give the chickens to the reptiles, did you?
No, I still
okay.
I still have the three hens, and they're well taken care of.
Why did somebody, James, why did somebody drop off chickens at the Tallgrass Trail?
My guess is they probably got them around the Eastern time.
Ah, yeah.
Easter time, when they're cute little chicks, and probably give them to kids or someone, and then, of course, you know, being an animal, what they're going to do? They're going to grow. They're going to get bigger, and then they turn into their adults. Well, they're not the cute little fuzzy chicks that they once were, and, well, I don't want to take care of them anymore. Well, out to the wild you go.
There's a similar story going on down in Florida, but they're a little bit larger. Boa constrictors, I think.
Burmese pythons.
Yeah, Burmese pythons.
Yeah, the pythons, yeah.
Yep, down in the Florida Everglades.
And they don't know what to do with them, so they actually have hunts for them, I guess.
Yes. And
you've got to be nuts to go hunting for a boa.
And the government, the state government in Florida, actually will pay people to harvest the snakes.
I think they turn in the heads.
Yes, yeah. And
is that right?
And also, too, is by something about the length, too. You know, they pay them so much. So there is a bounty. But I know you have to be registered. I think you have to apply for permits and all.
You have to have permits to go hunting.
Jonah probably knows a lot about this, being a reptile fan.
Probably.
Where did they come from? Did people just buy them as pets and keep them? Or
sometimes they're released as pets. I believe after some type of storm, some farms might have been opened up. People that were breeding them for the pet trade, they ended up getting released on accident.
Mm-hmm.
So they've passed laws to kind of, I believe you need to have a permit, or you might need to be grandfathered in. I'm not sure with the Burmese pythons, but some species like the green iguana, you basically cannot keep them unless maybe you already were keeping them when the law passed, but they're prohibited species now. And then there's also lots of regulations with different types of snakes that, like, they need to be inside of a cage that's locked, inside of a building that's locked with, like, double doors or something.
So, I made that law. Lock them up.
So that storm you were talking about, it was Hurricane Andrew.
Oh, yeah. I remember that.
Yep. When it came through, it opened up a lot of people's homes. And that's how they were first kind of introduced now, like Jonah mentioned, as they get bigger than people then want them and then release
Well,
them.
Aren't they originally from the Amazon? Or
no, they're from India, aren't
are they?
I want to say around Asia, India region.
Oh, that's why they're called Burmese.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Wake up, Glenn. Sorry, I only got up about 3 hours ago.
How much coffee have you had?
I haven't had enough yet, obviously. All right, well, fortunately, we don't have any of those out on the tall grass trail that we know of.
Yeah, right? that we know. All but right. They wouldn't survive our winters.
No, they wouldn't, I'm sure. I hardly do. So, all right. I just lost my train of thought. Oh, I was going to tell you about my sighting. I did not see another skunk, but I have smelled that darn skunk many times.
Oh, boy.
He has to be right in our arborvita outside our garage.
Could be.
Has to be, because I walk out at night and, whoa, my eyes get watery and the dog goes nuts. But he hasn't shown himself like he did 2 months ago or 3 months ago, where he stood up and glowered at us. I think glower's a word. I made that up, maybe. Anyway, but I was walking my puppy, and we were, as we do, at 6:30 in the morning. Dumb dog. He doesn't know when to go to the bathroom. But we were walking, and got to the end of our little walk, and there's an alleyway. It used to be an alleyway. It isn't anymore, but it's an open area where there's some trees and stuff. And there's this, I got to back up. The night before, I was pretty sure I saw a deer. Okay. In those trees in that area.
Yeah.
And but I kind of convinced myself I was seeing things.
Oh.
And the next day, we were walking along, and there's this giant female deer standing there. And I found out she was standing where she was standing the night before, eating something off of a tree. Do they ever eat flowers?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Flowers, leaves, branches.
I think she was eating the flowers off the tree because they were no longer there the next day.
Okay.
So I'm guessing that's what she was eating. But a little baby fawn came out that had to be less than a week old. Okay. It was tiny. It was kind of wobbly.
Yeah.
It was very, very thin. And so I thought, well, that's kind of weird. And then all of a sudden, the neighborhood became... Every time I walked down the neighborhood, somebody would say, "Have you seen that deer?" And now we're on Euler in town, you know. And my next door neighbor came out to me. She said, "I hear you saw that deer. That deer ran across 95 right in front of me and the dog."
Oh, geez.
And so apparently, but we haven't seen him in about 2 weeks. So apparently she's found a way to get away from civilization.
Probably.
So I hope so. Haven't seen a dead deer on the side of the road in the area, so that's good. But that was my sighting.
That's good.
Yeah. Okay, have you had any good sightings?
I mean, all the time.
All the time.
I mean, like last night, I already saw about 10 deer around my home.
Really?
Sandhill crane was actually in our one field, so that was pretty cool to see a sandhill crane.
Now, do they hibernate?
Who?
Sandhill cranes.
No, they migrate.
That's what I meant, not hibernate.
We don't have any birds that
sleep,
hibernate. But yeah, they go down to like Carolinas, Florida, and then they'll stay there in the winter, and then they'll migrate up here in the spring.
Okay, all right. Because I've only seen sandhill cranes only on Tallgrass Trail. That's the only place I've ever seen.
Really? Yeah. Go around Big Island Wildlife Area, and you'll
there's
see
a
them.
Little creek that goes underneath.
You're probably thinking it's probably a great blue heron.
Oh, I think you told me that once before.
Yeah.
Never mind. You can turn the radio back on. I'm wrong. Okay.
So sandhill cranes, they usually don't hang around like edges of creeks and rivers. Herons do and egrets do. Sandhill cranes, I mean, they sometimes do, but they like more prairie regions.
What do they look like?
The easiest way I can tell people is they look like great blue herons, but they're actually probably just as tall or maybe a tad shorter, and they stand more straight up versus the herons. They have the kind of that curve-shaped neck, mm-hmm. the S-shaped neck, and then they have the sandhills have this kind of red top to them. Versus great blue herons do not.
Okay, yeah, I'm absolutely certain now that it was a great blue that I saw, or a
great blue heron,
great blue heron that I saw because it didn't have anything on its head. So anyway, I haven't been out to the trail this year.
You haven't?
I have not. Oh, Glenn. I've been very bad. I've had lots of things going on, and we won't go into them. But I've had lots of things going on, including buying my new RV.
That's right.
So I spent the bad storm night out in my RV, which was kind of fun. It proved that our RV holds water out.
Oh, good.
And we were at Delaware State Park, had a great time, and I understand you had an interesting time.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
So we actually got hit by two storms that night, the straight line winds and the F1 tornado.
That's hard to believe that we had an F1 tornado.
Yeah, we had two.
Yeah.
He
lives out in Morrow County.
Yeah. I live out in the eastern half of Morrow County, kind of out by Chesterville region.
Okay.
That was a fun night because about midnight, the power went out, and then the straight line winds came and knocked the one tree down, and we reassessed the damage. It destroyed my wife's and my mother-in-law's car. And then, luckily, I saw on my phone that another round of storms were coming, and I moved it down our long drive. And then the tornado came, and if I didn't, it would have destroyed my car.
Well, we have a caller. I guess they want to know about that. Hang on. Hi, you're on the air. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
Got a dumb question.
Okay.
Why do birds migrate?
Why do birds migrate? That's a good question. Okay. Not a dumb question at all.
It's just, you know, if when they leave the north and they go to the south, why, and the weather is better down there, why don't they just stay there?
Good question.
That is a very good question.
I'll listen off the air.
All right. Sounds good.
That's a good question.
Yeah,
I'd stay down there, except for it gets awfully hot down there.
Yes, so the big reason why that birds migrate is, especially in this part of the country, being winter, not all birds are designed to live in our winter climates. And so, and we do, we have some, like think of cardinals and blue jays and goldfinches and woodpeckers. Those guys stay year-round. But being in a warmer climate, you know, that's going to be very beneficial for them because they don't have to, you know, fight against the cold. Also, do more food availability, you know, being in warmer climates. Now, the reason why they migrate back up, because especially think about the ones that travel thousands of miles, like the hummingbird.
Yeah.
They travel down to northern South America. And they travel almost about 3,000 miles.
Yeah.
And the reason why they come back is two reasons.
Because I'm up here.
Oh, that too. Okay. The big thing is food abundance, because we have to remember around the tropical regions that, you know, the bug cycle has happened year-round. And so there's still food around, but there's just not a lot of food. Now, during the summertime here, you go outside, there's tons of bugs.
Yeah.
So food availability is outrageous, like up here in Ohio. The second reason why that birds migrate back up north is there's a lot more egg predators and in the south America.
Snakes and stuff like
that. Well, we have snakes here, but think of there's a lot of more primates, so a lot more like monkeys and things that are related in the primate group. Toucans, they will prey upon.
They eat eggs.
Yep. Now they do eat fruits and nuts and things, but they have known to prey upon birds' nests. A lot more snake species down there. So, you know, your chances of having a successful nest is kind of slim. So that's why they come up here to Ohio. Now, don't get me wrong. We still have snakes and raccoons and things like that that can raid a nest. But again, there's just a lot more nest predators in South America.
Where do those hummingbirds nest? Where do they nest?
Are you talking about during the summer or
during
the winter?
Yeah, when they're up here.
So they will build their own little nests, and they will use spider silk. They'll use lichens. They'll use moss. And they'll use a little bit of grass, too, to kind of build the foundation. But that's only designed just for the eggs. Now, once the babies are hatched, and this is a general rule for most birds, you know, the nest is not there to be a permanent structure. It's just to raise the young and then off they go. You know, they're not going to stay there year round.
Do they come back to that nest?
For the most part, they do. Okay. As long as they're successful on raising the young, and also to finding food. If they're really stressed and not going to be able to do those two things, they're probably most likely not able to come back.
Now, eagles make nests and they go back to them a lot.
Yes, yes, and yeah, we do have some exceptions. Yeah, eagles do. Ospreys. Now, ospreys do migrate down south during the winter, but then come up here during the summer months. But yeah, they'll use that same nest structure.
Yeah. Now, you brought up two questions for me. Number All one right. is, why am I not seeing very many hummingbirds this year? Or is it just me?
It might just be you, because I'll admit, where I live out by Morrow County, we have quite a few.
I haven't seen one this year yet.
Really?
Yeah. And I have a hummingbird feeder out. And
Are you cleaning it, too?
Yeah.
Okay, so make sure to clean out regularly.
Yeah, I don't want a drunk hummingbird.
No.
They have pointy little things that might poke me.
The other thing I recommend, too, if you got, say, a banana or an apple or watermelon that's going bad, put it in like a little container, but make sure it still can hang.
Okay.
And gnats will be attracted to that.
Oh, sure they will.
And small little insects, and hummingbirds love that.
I will put one right next to my bird feeder, my hummingbird feeder.
And I've mentioned in the past, too, don't make just one single station. Now, if that's all your property can if that's all your property can handle, I mean, that's fine.
No, I'm just lazy.
Oh, okay. Now, but if you do have some land, you know, sprawl it out, because the problem is, if you put it all in one area, then I always get people saying, I have this one hummingbird, and it's really bad, and it chases out all the other ones. Well, of course, it's territorial.
Yeah, yeah. Well, now, my biggest problem, I think, is that my hummingbird feeder is real close to our kitchen window. Now, would they be frightened by my wife?
At first, I think they're a little hesitant, but once they get really habituated around people and knowing that, you know, hey, these people aren't going to hurt me.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had ones, I mean, close as Jonah and I.
Is that right?
I mean, yeah, as long as you, stay really kind of still for the most part and quiet.
He doesn't run away.
Well, that too.
Okay. Well, now, the second question was, I haven't seen hummingbirds, but I've seen a ton of woodpeckers this year. Is that unusual?
So probably from last year with the 18-year-old cicadas, the brood. Oh, why?
Sorry, just throw it wherever you want to.
the Brudex cicadas, that really increased the population, a lot of bird species, and not just birds, but mammals, reptiles, amphibians, because, it was a smorgasbord. I mean, and those little cicadas, I mean, had a lot of protein, a lot of fat, and, we've talked about it in the past, so, I mean, we're going to see a lot of, like you said, woodpeckers, and we can see a lot more, like my parents, they're seeing a lot of moles in their yard this year, because they live outside Richwood, and they got bombarded by the cicadas last year.
Now, we didn't get them too bad.
It depends on where you were in Marion County, and I still don't know the reason why. But, yeah, downtown Marion didn't get them, but if you were out by Green Camp, Prospect, LaRue, New Bloomington, they got hit.
Interesting.
And around Caledonia, they didn't get hit.
Huh.
And I'm not sure up by your area, Jonah. Did you get hit by the cicadas?
I think so.
You think so? I'm just curious if the Morrow region got hit.
Now, if you're like me, you would have known it, because I can't stand those things. But I'm afraid of everything, so.
Yeah.
I'm afraid of my wife. I'm afraid of my dog. Anyway. No, I'm not afraid
of
my dog.
Just don't play dead in front of your wife.
I think she thinks I'm already dead. All right. naturally, I know what I was going to ask you about. Are there things that we can do to help, like putting up birdhouses? Is that a good help? And also putting up, I have a Mason Bee house that I've put up, and I've got several Mason Bees in my yard.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, birdhouses are always beneficial. Now, I always tell people, do your research, because different bird species are going to like different designs.
And you have to have the right size hole.
The right size hole, sometimes the dimension of the house.
Mm-hmm.
Bluebirds, they kind of like a thin chicken wire kind of inside. They help kind of crawl out.
Oh.
Same with wood ducks. And
ducks go in birdhouses?
Yeah, there's wood duck boxes.
I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. But it's funny about those. I mean, wood ducks will take advantage of it, but then you got owls. Mm-hmm. I've seen a lot of owls in wood duck boxes before. But also the height requirement. There's some bird species that are kind of general. They'll take anything, but some like it up really, really, really high. Some like it kind of more at ground level. So, again, doing that proper research. And what's really nice is go to things like the Audubon Society, ODNR, you know, those really big agencies. They're going to have a lot of great information of you know, what bird species you want and what's the proper, you know, house structure and height, you know, requirements. And hold size, too, as you were mentioning.
Now, mason bees are something that just about anybody can do.
Yeah.
And they're really inexpensive to do. Now, could we do something like build bird houses or mason bee homes, whatever you want to call them, out on the tall grass trail? Would that be helpful?
You could, and we've actually had some Boy Scout projects in the past.
That would be nice.
That we have put out mason bee houses. Now, we haven't had those yet, but yeah, if there's a Boy Scout out there listening, or you know Boy Scout, we're always looking for Eagle Scout projects.
Now, the nice thing about mason bees is they pollinate about 60% more than hummingbee.
The honeybee, yes. Yeah, a lot of people don't realize a honeybee is not a native species.
Really?
Nope. It originated in China, and then it got over to Europe, and then when the colonizers came here, they introduced them. And so, I mean, yes, don't get me wrong, the honeybee is great and all, but our native bees, as you mentioned, pollinate a lot more than the little common hummingbees.
It's kind of fun to watch a mason bee, and I guess probably three that I get to watch because I know they go back to the same place.
Yeah.
When they go to pollinate, they don't intend, I'm sure they're not saying, I've got to go pollinate that
flower. Yeah.
Zucchini. They like to go to my zucchini.
Yeah.
Anyway, I watch them and they fly up to the zucchini flower and they flop. I mean, they actually flop on their back.
Oh, yeah, they work out hard.
And then they kind of wander around. Well, they're so fuzzy that they collect pollen from every place, and they take it to every place.
Yeah.
And that's why they're better at pollinators. And
absolutely.
I would think, since we've had problems with honeybees, they have died off quite a bit. I don't know if they're back on the resurgence, but
yes, they are. They're doing good now.
But the mason bees would be really helpful, I would think, to farmers and and people that grow flowers and stuff like that.
No, you're absolutely right. And you know, when we're always saying about save the bees, the problem is all we're focusing on is the honeybee.
Yeah.
And we don't realize that all of our native bees, you know, as we've been talking about, they do actually, in my opinion, do a lot better job than the honeybee.
Well, if you
but the honeybee gets the credit because obviously, of course, it produces honey.
And the girls scream when they come around.
That's right. Yeah.
Now I have learned I don't have to be afraid of these mason bees. They will actually come over and buzz right by me.
Yep.
And I don't have to worry about them because they aren't interested in me at all.
No.
I guess I've been watching several things on YouTube, and I guess if you grab one, it might sting your hand.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not...
If you're aggressive, they'll do it.
And it's not as bad a sting, apparently, as honeybees are. So,
okay.
It hurts, but it's not as bad.
Now, wasps and hornets, especially hornets, that's an entirely different story. I think they were just born angry.
Yeah, mud wasps, or whatever they're called, the ones that make the mud houses.
Oh, the paper wasps, yeah.
They're just mean. They don't pay any attention to civil attitudes or anything anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to, I almost forgot to ask, Jonah, where are you going to school now?
Okay, I'm going to school at Pleasant High School. I'll be a senior this year, but I'm taking classes through OSUM and MTC.
Okay, cool. So he's going to be a smart guy. He's going to take your place.
Right? He probably could. He's a very smart young man.
Have you thought about where you're going to go after school, after high school?
Yeah, I want to enroll in OSU and study zoology and maybe veterinary science after that.
What type of science?
Veterinary.
Oh, yeah, that'd be nice, yeah. We can use good vets, unfortunately. Well, we have good ones here in town.
We do.
I've really enjoyed the ones that I have here in town. But when I lived in Athens, I think we only had two vets in the whole area of Athens.
Oh, I can see that.
And they had farm animals that they had to take care of, so yeah. Quite often you couldn't get into them. So
yeah.
Maybe it's better now, but that's been a long time. Okay, so you're thinking about going to OSU. I was going to call you the boss, but apparently the mentor hasn't tried to twist your arm to go to Hocking or anything like that, right?
No, I'm going to go to OSU.
OSU.
Yeah,
Hocking doesn't go to OSU.
Yeah, well, Hocking doesn't offer a zoology program.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Okay.
Now, maybe in the future they may, but yeah, they. Now, OU, I know, does, because I've had several friends that have gone through zoology.
Well, I didn't know that they had a zoology program. My eldest son went there to get his degree in medicine.
Okay.
And he proved to himself he wasn't smart enough, so he ended up being a writer.
Okay.
Creative writing or something like that. Anyway, he's written lots of books, as a matter of fact.
Really?
I think he has 12 books that he's written. We had him on the air a few months ago, telling people where they could get his books on Amazon.
And, oh, okay.
They're not my kind of book.
I get you.
They're science fiction type
books. Oh, okay.
And I've read about one chapter in all 12 of his books. His mother reads them all, as mothers do, but not me. Anyway. Okay, we've got time enough to talk about what you brought in today.
All right.
The daylily.
Yes, it's also known as the ditch lily, or also known as the wash
name.
Or the wash lily. So the reason why they call them ditch lilies, because guess where you find them? Yes, you primarily find them around roadsides, the road ditches. And I wanted to talk about them because right now they're in kind of their full peak, their full bloom. And a lot of people think that they're native here to the state of Ohio.
I did, yeah.
Yeah, but they are not. They are actually out from the Asia area. But people say, I've seen them forever. Well, guess what? They have been here for a very, very long time. They believe by 1793... I think that's when the first one was brought here.
Why would they bring them here?
So, you know, looking at it, yeah, it's pretty, you know, it makes a nice fragrance to it. And there's actually some funny stories when sea captains would be out on their adventures, and they would go out to these exotic places, and not just daylilies, but other exotic flower species, mm-hmm. and then bring them home to their wives, because I think they're trying to kiss and make up that they were out on shore for a few months.
A good daylily and some bread plant will take care of any feelings. Yeah.
There you go. So, but yes, they are actually considered an invasive species.
Does that mean they're bad?
Yes, that means they're bad.
Okay.
And we have to think about, not just daylilies, but invasives in general. I love this one quote that said, invasive species that, you know, they're not intentionally bad. They're just brought here on accident. And they just do their thing.
They're not intentionally trying to take over.
No, they're just trying to survive. But unfortunately, you know, they're outcompeting our native species.
Yeah.
And a lot of times they'll push them out. And, you know, we're talking about the whole pollinator situation. I mean, yes, you will see pollinators take advantage of, you know, on these flowers. But the problem is a lot of our caterpillar species can't really chew on them. And there's a few, you know, caterpillar species that may take advantage of an invasive species because they're generalists, but some are very, very specific. Think of monarchs, because mm-hmm. monarchs like milkweed. Well, if you've got daylilies coming in, taking over along these roadsides, road ditches, you know, common milkweed, it's a very, you know, prolific wildflower. And so, you know, that's outcompeting the milkweed species, which then again, no monarchs. So that kind of just shows you that, you know, how bad, you know, these daylilies can be.
Yeah, when I was a kid, my mother and father had this little plot of land that one of our farmers gave us every year to garden, and there was milkweed everywhere. Yeah. I loved milkweed because you could open them up and things would fly away.
Yep.
I can't tell you the last time I saw milkweed.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, it just depends where you are. They're everywhere.
You told me that there is some out on the Tallgrass Trail.
Oh, we got tons of Tallgrass Trail. And again, if you go along the roadside ditches, I mean, you can see milkweed.
I don't hang around roadside ditches. I don't even like the name roadside ditches. So.
These guys are
sounds
pretty...
like somebody I would have dated.
These guys are pretty drought tolerant, but they do like hanging around, you know, places that gain moisture and open sunlight. Oh, we got a call?
Yeah, that's all right. Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure, sure.
Are you having a thing at Tall Grass Trail tomorrow, or did I miss that?
Are you talking about kiddos at the park?
No, this had something to do with turtles.
No, that was on Tuesday.
Oh, I missed it.
I thought it was on Friday.
And that's probably my fault because we neglected to get he's got a schedule, and we neglected to get it for this month and hang it up, and so I haven't been telling people. I'm sorry. Are you a big turtle fan?
Oh, I've had turtles when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You
I don't think I could do too good with turtles now.
You aren't
I don't
one
think
of those,
my dog would.
Oh, you aren't one of those crazy people who sticks your hand in the mud and pulls out snapping turtles, are you?
No, okay, no. I had a box turtle when I was a kid.
Sure. Yeah. You've got box turtles out there at the Tall Grass.
No, not box turtles.
Okay. What? Oh, painted?
Painted soft shells and snapping turtles.
Okay.
Are the three species you'll see.
Okay. Well, we're sorry we're a couple days too late for you.
Oh, well, such is life.
Yeah. Keep listening. Thanks for calling.
Go ahead. You're having Swap Shop today, right?
Yeah, Swap Shop will be on at 12:15. Yeah, 12:15.
12:15.
Yep. It's been picking up lately, so give us a call.
Okay.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right. Yeah, our swap shop has been picking up lately.
Good. Yeah. I'm glad.
Well, I'm sort of hoping we could rest it away. But
I get you.
But we're starting to get people calling
around.
In, so I guess we're going to keep it going.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Continue. Now, daylilies, you were telling me this type of daylily is different than the daylilies that you buy.
Yes, and the native lilies that we have in Ohio.
Tell us about this.
Yeah, so a lot of people don't realize we have about 6-7 different native lily species. And what makes the ones you see along the roadside ditches, they're closely related, but what makes them really different, three things. Actual lilies come out of bulbs. These lilies, or the ditch lilies, they grow more through the root structures.
Are they still called daylilies,
yes,
though?
Yes, yeah.
They're still out of bulbs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Then also, too, these actual daylilies, they only, within their name, only last about 24 hours, a little bit more than that.
Yeah.
But actual lily species, the actual bloom can last, you know, for a couple days.
Okay.
Now, the blooming period can last, you know, from 3 to 5 weeks. And also, too, what makes these ditch lilies different is these do not have leaves on their stalk. First, lilies do have leaves on their stalks.
Now, are all ditch lilies that orange color? That's
yes.
The most common.
That's the most common. I have seen more that look kind of, I guess, more red tint to it.
Okay.
I've seen some that have a little bit more yellow, but I guess the orange, I guess you would say, is the more average colors.
One of the ladies that worked at the credit union where I was for a long time had a little farm out by the driving range.
Okay.
They were right next to the driving range. I think she's gone now. But she had maybe a half an acre of what she called daylilies, and they were every color under the rainbow.
Oh, yeah.
So those must have been regular lilies.
Yes, those were hybrids.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Now, this does have a lot of edible and medicinal properties.
Really? Tell us about that.
So some of the edible properties is the actual petals. You can eat them raw, or you can, like I've done, and I know it's not the healthiest, but putting in flour and egg and frying it up, everything tastes better frying.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, that's healthy.
Oh, yeah. they do say,
bacon fat, too.
That's right, bacon fat. They do say the young leaves you can eat, too, but they say be careful of doing it in large quantities because it can be hallucinogenic. So it can get you a little high, I guess.
Wow. And a dog might have peed on it.
And then that too. So I would not mess with the leaves.
Okay.
They do say some of the tubers or some of the roots, I think you can boil it maybe. But I know with the leaves, flower petals, you can put in stews and soups, and it can be as a thickening substance. But some of the medicinal properties, so the people in Asia where this originated from, they would give it to women who are in labor.
Oh.
So they thought it could help with that. The roots, they think if they boiled it, it would help with parasites. So if you had ringworm or roundworm, they thought it was a blood purifier. It's really, really interesting. Oh, there's actually some studies that – or not studies, or some readings that some people in China will still use it to cure cancer. I'm not sure if it's true or not, but it is interesting.
Well, there's so many plants like that they claim are medicinal.
Oh,
now, I've tried several of those plants that they claim are medicinal. Yeah. Some of them for recreational reasons. But I've tried the ones that are supposedly medicinal, and I've never seen any effect at all.
That's good.
Putting aloe
yeah.
on a burn.
Oh, yeah, I do that.
I don't see that it makes any difference. Does it?
Oh, yeah.
I'd rather put butter on a burn.
Oh.
I mean, the butter may be thicker. I don't know. So, therefore, the burn doesn't burn. So I don't know.
Yeah. But if you are lost in the wild, they do have a lot of carbohydrates. They have about 60% carbohydrates. They have about 10% fat. And they have about 3% protein. So
now, why would you know that?
I looked it up.
Okay.
So if you're out there in the wild and, you know, you're getting really hungry, so, again, just eat the petals.
Okay. Don't ask Dr. Atkins because that's too high in carbohydrates.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sorry about that. Okay, so this one's very small.
Yeah, yeah. Jonah actually pointed that out, too. But, yeah, they can get about 10 inches to about 6 feet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they can get pretty tall.
Pretty tall. Now, the flower itself is what? Maybe 4 inches across when it's spread out? Maybe 3 inches?
I would say at least 3 inches, yeah.
But I would think that I've seen some that are very big along the roadsides.
Yeah, it's just probably in better conditions.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one has little blossoms. Now that you've picked it, will those blossoms die away?
So if I kept it in this bottle of water, I mean, it might. And also, too, if I put, like, the plant food, like your preservatives, it may last a little longer. But
it won't last long. One day anyway, right? They're only going to last one day.
Yeah, they will only last about a day.
Yeah. That's why they're called daylilies.
That's right. That's
okay,
right.
Okay, all right. Well, we've got about 6 more minutes left to go if we have anybody that's interested in calling in, like this last gentleman, 740-383-9944. That's 740-383-9944. And I'm really glad that you brought Jonah in.
Yeah.
Now, you told me that he's going to be more involved at the next get-together.
Yes, for both of our radio programs. I'm still going to be here, but I want him to get experience.
Okay.
So I want him to, you know, kind of like what I'm doing, you know, talk and about the subjects and just things out in nature.
So we're going to have to come up with subjects that we can talk about. I'm not real good about subjects, but I'll give it a try. But I'll tell Buddy to think about you.
Okay. Look about reptiles. This kid is amazing with reptiles. Yes.
It'll most definitely be about reptiles.
Yeah. It'll definitely be about reptiles. Just don't let him bring one in.
I told him he should at least bring his crested gecko. They're cute little things.
Crested gecko. What is that?
I'll let him talk about it.
Yeah, what's a crested gecko? We got about 5 minutes. What's a crested gecko?
Well, it's... It's a type of gecko. It's a lizard species, so it's like a family or like a section off of the geckos, and a crested gecko is one of the more common ones you'd find at like pet stores and stuff.
Is that like the critter that's on TV?
Geico, yeah.
Yeah, Geico the gecko?
that's probably, that looks more like a day gecko.
Okay. He's kind of unusual looking. He has a nice smile, though, and his eyes always soften my heart.
And he has that nice Australian accent.
Yes, he does have a nice Australian. Does your gecko have an Australian accent?
Well, they are from New Caledonia, which is in the Oceania area, which is in and around Australia. So,
is that right? That's the only place they're found
native?
Yeah,
they're found in the New Caledonian Islands, and there's a bunch of other species of New Caledonian geckos.
What do they eat? What do you feed it?
So they are omnivores, so they will eat insects, but mainly they eat like a fruit-based diet. So they're so with them, since a lot of people keep them and the different types of New Caledonian geckos, you can just buy this powder stuff, you mix it with water, and then they eat it out of the cups, which basically mimics like fruit and such, but it has everything they need, like calcium and all the different vitamins and stuff they need.
Are they like guinea pigs, where once you have one, you lose it in your house 15 times a month?
Well, that depends on how well you build the enclosure.
Have you lost any in your house before?
Yeah, but I have a lot of them.
No.
Oh, so. Good. I'm not going to his house. You know, I was the chameleons down in on the Keys. We camped down there one time, and they aren't afraid of people at all. They'll walk right across your body while you're sleeping. Does this one kind of He's not afraid of humans, I assume, since
you're... Yeah, some of them, I've dealt with a lot of them. I've babysat some as well, and I've I take them in a lot. So I've handled a lot of different crested geckos, and they're generally friendly. Some are... So I've found, one that was aggressive, but other than that, they're all pretty much fine with handling.
Do they have teeth?
They do technically have teeth, but they're small. And they're,
like sandpaper? Real small.
Yeah, that's negligible.
You've never been... No geckos ever drawn blood on you or whatever they're
called. Well, it depends how hard they bite.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yikes.
That's what that one did, but it didn't bleed for any amount of time.
Kind of like just a paper cut, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'm not really afraid of those, I don't think, because I've seen the one on TV, and he's pretty friendly.
Yeah. Sells the insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're not doing an ad, so don't worry about it, FCC. All right. Well, we got to get out of here. Here we've got about a minute and a half. And what you got? Any ideas what we should talk about when we come back?
Anything under the sun.
Anything under the sun.
We could do bears, like we were talking about.
Oh yeah, we got to talk about that bear sighting down in southern Ohio.
Yeah, the two bear sightings.
Two bear sightings. Yeah, and I can tell re-talk about the one that I had, which surprised the heck out of me while I was driving my car. Okay, and Jonah will rejoin us. I assume he doesn't have to leave early, since you're his ride, I suppose.
No, he came on his own.
Came on his own. Don't go into that Washington Street, because that hole they have over there is about 3 feet deep.
Oh, wow.
They broke the water main over there yesterday. That was kind of fun.
Oh, wow.
Got to watch the water going up and down. Anyway. Oh, and I got another thing I can talk about. I can talk about the birds that I get in my backyard, because I've added a water feature to my bird bath that is solar. So it
shoots. Oh, you got a bubbler mister?
It goes up in the air. It goes up about 6 inches in the air.
Yeah, sounds like a bubbler.
And then all the birds like to come and sit on it.
Yeah.
It makes me very angry, because they do their business while they're sitting on my bubbler.
Oh, probably.
Okay, well, we'll be back here in about 15 minutes. Make sure to give us a call. And I'm Glenn Coble. We'll get out of here for the next 15 minutes. Thanks for listening.
You're listening to WWE.